I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 82. It's going to be 100 soon.
Yes, yeah. We're just talking about what we should do for our 100th episode. So if anyone's got any ideas, do let us know. We're thinking maybe we do a live show or something where, you know, Andy does it in the street naked, or, you know, I don't know. We're looking for ideas for what we can do to celebrate our 100th show. So probably won't be till the new year. I've got to work it out exactly. But if anyone's got any ideas, drop us an email and let us know. You can use the hashtag IMPC.
Of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.co.uk. That is the longest interrupted sentence I think we've ever done.
Yeah.
It's a questions and answers, and we have an audio question.
Yes.
And some papery printed out questions. Let's start with the audio questions, actually.
Yeah.
That was from Anthony. Let's have a listen.
Hi, Kelvin and Andy. It's Anthony from jumps.co.uk and also the Man About Brighton blog. Just a quick question for you, really, for the show. Just wanted to find out more information about RSS readers and what you guys use and recommend. It's one of those things that I've never really bothered with, but I'm just checking too many websites now. So just want to have a look and get some advice from you. Speak to you soon. Keep up the good work.
Right, so Anthony's asking about RSS readers. Got
yeah.
any thoughts, Kelvin?
Well, I mean, personally, I use Google Reader. To manage my RSS feed. I know some people use NetVibes, and you can use it. You can do it in Outlook, and in a lot of the internet browsers like Firefox as well, you can manage it with their live bookmarks. But I just use Google Reader. So I use my Google account, sign up to the RSS feed of those websites, and then I can go into my Google Reader. It acts a bit like a Gmail account, and it just kind of queues up everything I've not read from the website, websites I find interesting. Simple to use, you can share it quite easily from there. The only thing I would say is it's getting harder and harder to keep up with all of my feeds. I had a huge purge about sort of 2 or 3 months ago where I got rid of maybe 70% of what I read.
Yep.
And even now, I'm still finding it a lot harder to keep up. Now, I don't know if that's because they're publishing more frequently or just because I'm a bit busier with other things keeping, you know, like other distractions, Twitter and being busy at work and all that kind of thing. But yeah, quite hard to keep up. But from Anthony's point of view, I think Google Readers is the best place to start. You're a Google Reader user, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do. I certainly use Gmail and I use the Google Reader.
Yeah.
And I just love the convenience. I don't know, I just like the convenience of it. Mm. I like being able to do stuff in my browser without having to launch another application. Mm. Although, having said that, I did have a play with, is it NetNewsWire?
Okay.
I downloaded a trial of that a few weeks ago and was quite impressed with it. That was on the Mac. Actually don't know if it's, if you can get, I think you can get it for Windows. But it worked very nicely on the Mac. It's very Mac-esque, the way it works. But I have to say, for me, just Google Reader. But that point you made about getting overloaded is a very, very relevant point. Mm. And the thing about Google Reader, it doesn't it let you search
your
feeds and sort of divide them in that way. So that might be quite a good approach.
And I mean, there's other ways of doing it as well. Because, I mean, we talked actually in our last News and Tools episode about a tool called Twitter Times. So Twitter, TIM.ES, that acted like a newspaper. And there's actually been another one that's come out literally the day we recorded that I've come across and got on my iPad. So it's an iPad specific app, so not, you know, usable for everyone. but it's called Flipboard.
Oh, yeah.
And what that does is it pulls in stuff that people are sharing. So in the same way Twitter Times did. Twitter Times was just for Twitter, but... Twitter Times only pulled in what your friends were linking to. Now, what Flipboard does is it pulls in what your friends are tweeting that it thinks are most important and what your friends are sharing that they think is most important. And then all within the app, you can then comment on that or like retweet it and send it on.
Mm.
But it does it for Facebook as well and also for like aggregated feeds.
Right.
So you could almost have, you know, you could put together a feed of every decent, you know, internet marketing blog, put that into Flipboard, and then it give you, it's like a really pretty way of browsing content online.
Mm.
Now, whether it's actually better than anything that precedes it or whether it's just kind of, it's fancy, oh, it's on a touch screen, it's a lot more exciting because of that. But that's another way to keep, so it depends what Anthony wants to use an RSS reader for. If it, is it just to never miss a post from a small number of people? That's the case, RSS readers are definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's more, there's all this stuff going on out there, how can I keep track of all of it? What's most important? What do I need to be aware of?
Mm.
Then things like Twitter Times or Flipboard, I think, probably are starting to be the clever way of doing that. Because actually, rather than this, you know, rather than knowing every post from a small number of websites or a huge number of websites, if you've got too many people in your feed, it's actually which ones are the important ones, the significant ones.
Yes.
And allow your social graph, so your friends, to do the filtering, you know, for you there. So, yeah, different options, really.
I think this could be a whole show, you know, dealing with RSS.
Yeah.
What's important, knowing what's important and what isn't.
Well, then you can start to use stuff like Yahoo Pipes. And I know that one of our first secret screencasts we did, that's now like one of the free videos on the premium.internetmarketingpodcast.org, was how you can use Yahoo Pipes to like pre-filter Yahoo Answer questions.
Yes. Yeah.
But essentially what Yahoo Pipes does is it allows you to do some filtering of RSS feeds.
Mm.
So you can do some clever stuff there that, you know, if we were to do a future show where it'd be like, okay, I've got all of this stuff on Mashable, but I'm only interested in the stuff that's about Apple. Mm. Or do you know what I mean? You just kind of do clever filtering there, or all the stuff that is on Mashable but isn't about Apple. Maybe might be a more useful one, if you know what I mean. So you can exclude certain types of posts. So maybe like, I know like Shoe Money does his Free Shirts Friday. It's like, well, it's quite interesting, but to be honest, I've got so much in my RSS reader, I really don't need to see just a picture of him in someone else's T-shirt. So maybe I could set up a feed of his site but exclude all the ones that had T-shirt in the title.
I know that Dan has got some ideas on how to deal with RSS, so perhaps that'll go into another show.
Yeah, in a future episode, yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's do the first of our paper questions then. This one's from, let's have a look, from Mark Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
I've scoured my iTunes looking for one of your shows that talked about whether to place your blog in a subdomain or a subdirectory, but can't find it. My main website is an off-the-shelf PHP/MySQL application, not based on any CMS, so there is no blogging functionality built in. I really want to make the site more interactive by including some forums, a blog, a place for members to get together and exchange ideas. My current website's technology doesn't provide this, so I'm torn between customizing the current app, brackets, which would feel like reinventing the wheel, brackets, or set up a subdomain like blog.mydomain.com or members.mydomain.com and install something like WordPress or Joomla there with all the necessary plugins. Hope all this makes sense, he says. Thanks again for all your fantastic podcasts. I've been listening to them for what must be a couple of years now, and they're truly the best thing since sliced bread. Thank you very much, Mark.
So yeah,
they're nice, aren't they?
Everyone's very, very lovely when they send in their questions.
What are your thoughts on here?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a question that we've answered in various different formats and different permutations for people, which is basically what's best, a subdirectory, a subfolder, or a separate domain for a blog website. And actually, I'm going to do a couple of episodes on the Premium Podcast dealing with all the permutations of this, because we have talked about it in various episodes, but I think maybe a flow chart is the way to explain if you've got this one, you've got this problem.
Yes.
And I'll try and explain it that way. But to answer Mark's question, I think what I initially read was, oh, okay, well, he can't put it as a subfolder, which is our preferred, in most cases, we say, if you're going to put a new blog up or a forum, rather than putting on a separate domain or a subdomain, put it as a subfolder. So domain.com/forum or /blog. And that's what my initial thought for him was, is that, oh, well, I feel sorry for him if he can't put it there, because sometimes technology will not allow you to do that. So say, for example, you had a Windows-based server environment.
Yeah.
You then wouldn't be able to put WordPress easily as a subfolder. You can with some jiggery pokery in it. Is it IIS?
IIS. Information something server. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can do that. But if his case, his website was set up so it had like .ISP pages or .ISPX, he wouldn't be able to put that as a subfolder without some serious jiggery pokery.
Mm.
But from what he said, he's using MySQL and PHP. What that means is he's definitely got a Linux-based server environment, which does mean that he could set up a separate folder, so domain.com/blog, and set up WordPress within that folder, and it would act exactly the same as if it was a subdomain. So it wouldn't look the same as his normal site, so he's still got that problem to deal with. Mm. But I think he would have that if it was on a subdomain or if it wasn't. So
yes, yes.
That's probably another issue there. But if you've got a Linux, so if you've got that server environment that uses PHP, you can just set up separate folders and do installations of all these different fancy, you know, WordPress, Joomla, PHPBB, BBPress, which is the WordPress forum, all these different ones, and you can just set them up in particular subfolders and they'll operate there perfectly happily. So I would say I can see where he thought he might have the problem because he's got this CMS that doesn't allow it as an add-on. Means he has to do it differently. But actually, you can just set it up as a subfolder, I think, without too much hassle.
So you reckon if he can, the subfolder is a way to
I think in almost every case, a subfolder is better than a subdomain. And because I see a subdomain as a bit of a kind of not the best of both worlds, because if it's a separate website, it's freestanding, it's got its own audience, its own way of doing things, you can have its own look and feel. If it's a subfolder, it's more integrated, it's more part of your general overall internet marketing. And I think a subdomain is kind of a bit between the two. Now, if you've got a huge site like eBay or Gumtree or all these kind of Amazon, then subdomains work because you've kind of got limited, you know, you've got thousands of millions of pages and it makes sense to kind of have them housed somewhere separate. But for most websites, it's perfectly capable to all sit on one domain.
Okay.
Well, hopefully that'll help Mark out.
Okay, moving on as he slides the paper out of the way. This one's from Craig Griffiths. Not sure where Craig's from. Hi, Kelvin. Quick question. Since I consider you gents the oracles of all thing nettish. That's a good word, isn't it?
I've never heard us described as nettish, but no, that's quite cool.
Yes. I need your help. My blog, askfindby.blogspot.com, is getting no traffic. I love writing it, so it's worrying me a great deal. I went to Feedburner, and it gave me the option of Atom or RSS.
Mm-hmm.
Atom was the default, so I took that, which is better for my style of blog. You guys take a real approach to business and not the chain letter approach of the affiliate community. Well done.
Thanks, Craig. He's gone on the kind of complimentus. They'll definitely ask that question. Yeah. Good angle.
Yeah, we'll give
him
the fiver later.
So, yeah, I mean, actually, I had to do a bit of research here off the back of myself because I didn't really appreciate that there was a huge distinction between Atom feeds and RSS feeds.
Mm.
I think it's kind of a format issue, so it's kind of a bit of a two different markup languages almost for feeds. I don't know if you've got...
Yeah, it's two different specs, basically, for the same sort of idea.
Yeah, and I think RSS, of the two, is the more widely adopted.
Mm.
But I would hope that in Google's case, because he's using .blogspot there, that Google aren't going to have any problems understanding a feed from a website they host and maintain.
Mm.
So I would say that I think all things being equal, RSS is the preferred version. I don't think it's quite as functional as Atom, from my understanding.
Yeah, I don't actually know what the difference is, to be honest.
But I don't think that probably is the reason necessarily that he might be having problems. So if you're not getting traffic there, I mean, as a platform, blogger.com and hosted on Blogspot, despite Google knowing that they can trust that because they're in charge of it, you very rarely see websites on blogspot.com doing that well in the search results.
Mm.
Now, I think that's because, I can kind of see their argument here, that Google's point of view is, if you're not confident enough in a website that you're not prepared to spend 10, 15 quid on a domain name for it, or maybe 50 quid a year to get it hosted, is it that serious a website? And that's not to say that in this case, you know, that Craig's not, you know, the quality of his work there isn't absolutely amazing, but from Google they make judgments. That's what the software has to do. The algorithm has to do. And if they're saying, okay, well, on blogspot.com we know most of these websites are okay, but we don't trust them that much, so I'd consider getting your own domain name and doing that now rather than later, because it has an impact on your SEO when you start to change all these things over. Mm. And you're best off doing that as early as you possibly can. And then exploring maybe another blogging software, because blogger.com isn't the most search engine friendly. You can do well with it, but it makes life more difficult for you.
Well, this is Blogspot. I think. Yeah. Is the same true for Blogger and Blogspot?
Yeah, well, blogger.com powers Blogspot.
Oh, sorry.
So it's like WordPress.
There's me being inept there.
So yeah, so the distinction is that...
So I'm not the oracle of all things inept, am I?
So, well, you can use Blogger on your own domain. So that would be my first tip. Mm. Get it on your own domain. Get your own links. You own them. You're not connected to any other website there in that way. But then the second step is explore whether Blogger is the best solution for you. I know in the premium forum, a lot of people have been talking recently about moving from WordPress.com, which is the equivalent to Blogspot, to WordPress.org, where it's hosted on your own servers and the like there.
Yeah.
And it is worth the effort if you're taking the blog seriously, because it gives you all kinds of additional functionality. So that's not to say WordPress is the best solution for everyone all the time, but... it's definitely probably the easiest to get SEO right with of the various options. There's ones like, what is it, TypePad from, is it Textapart or whatever? Their guy, TypePad is definitely another one that's quite well regarded.
I think it is Textapart, something like that,
Which is also very good. It kind of suffers from the fact it's not quite as cool as WordPress. I think it's perfectly as functional. But yeah, that probably is more likely the reason why he's struggling to get traffic, is kind of conventional SEO reasons or conventional marketing reasons, rather than the distinction between ad atom or RSS feeds.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully that was helpful, Craig. Let's move on to the next one. This one is from Josh Lipton. He's got an IP address, but I can't work out where in the world that's from.
I think it's because, yeah, no, that one's a comment, wasn't it? So, yeah, rather than an email, we get their IP address.
Oh, sorry, this is a comment. Oh, yes. Silly me. What a clot I am. He says, I enjoyed this post. I always call podcast postcast.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I enjoyed this podcast as it had quite a few things relevant to my business strategy. We currently have a collection of niche cycling websites. I've often debated over the advantages and disadvantages of all these different domains. Sorry, which episode was he?
I think he was referring
to
one...
avoid doing damage when you upgrade your site. That was number 74, wasn't it? Yeah. Overall, I've gone with the notion that we perform well within our specific niches, in part because our URL's keywords strongly target these niches, and also because our customers like the look and feel of our focus on these specific niches, with each one having its own domain. This does lead to some split efforts and not combining the strength of our SEO. We have mitigated some of the downside of these split efforts in developing our own multi-site management system customized for OS Commerce. That's an open source. He goes on, among the three specialty cycling websites, which is biketrailershop.com, bikebagshop.com, and bikekidshop.com, we also have a blog, biketrailerblog.com. I'd be considering moving biketrailer.com into a subfolder, biketrailershop.com/blog, and was wondering what your thoughts are in regard to this. It sounds like if we're starting from scratch, you'd recommend this strategy for SEO purposes, but given that these sites are both about 5 years old, would it not be beneficial to make the move at this point, given that we did all of the proper redirects and maintain the content as much as possible? I'm thinking that such a move will help to boost up our SEO for our biketrailershop.com.
Yeah,
thoughts, so, Mr. Newman.
Yeah, so it's another one of these subdomains versus subfolders versus separate domains issue that we kind of a lot of people seem to be wrangling with the whys and the wherefores here. So he's in a different situation to Mark's question, who we talked about earlier. He was like, I want to add it. What's the best place to add it? Mm-hmm. What they've done is they've got this system in place. They've got these websites. They've been running for, 4 or 5 years, he was saying?
5 years, yeah.
So they're kind of there. They're established. Now, for those guys, it's going to be hard to justify the change, because if you start in a certain way, you've not lost anything by making these changes. But if you were to move that blog from a separate domain to a subfolder, that even with 301 redirects, even with keeping the content exactly the same with the same URLs and the same content there behind it, there is going to be a period where Google take their time to ascertain what's going on.
Well, Google scratches its head.
Yeah, and that could be lost traffic and that could be lost business. Now, the benefit that in this particular situation, you've got the blog, so it's probably not as commercially significant as the if they were doing it in the other direction. So that helps. I would, if the audience of those two websites overlap exactly, which it sounds like they do, so if you're interested in bike trailers and you're reading about it on their blog, you're going to be interested in the shop. I see very few reasons to keep it separate, other than the fact potentially, so I would say it makes perfect sense, because my normal argument is if you've got two different audiences, maybe have two different domain names.
Yeah.
But this sounds like it's got exactly the same audience, so I'd say one domain name. But there is a slight niggle in the back of my head, because they've done it for such a long period of time, that maybe keeping it separate helps, because it seems a little less commercial. So when people are linking to you, if you're seen as too kind of businessy, sometimes you'll struggle to get links. And the fact that it's not on the shop domain might help in that regard. So that's the only reason I can see why you might want to keep them separate. But actually, I'd maybe say bite the bullet. The blog and the shop have exactly the same audience. If you're trying to use the blog as a means to generate traffic to the shop, it should be on the same domain name, because it just makes it easier, really, for everyone involved. So yeah, a slightly different situation. And like, this is the reason I'm going to do this follow-up premium episode on the various combinations of why one works, why others don't work. But I think in this particular question for Josh, I'd maybe move it, unless you've got lots and lots of links to the blog that you don't think you would have got if it had been on the shop.
So at the end of the day, you think it should be moved into a sub-directory? Subfolder.
Subfolder, yeah. I mean,
after much umming and ahhing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think with
it's
these
close
ones...
close one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think increasingly with a lot of internet marketing decisions that there isn't a right answer to anything. There's just differing opinions. Fuzzy logic and a kind of way that you would do things. But I always come back to the idea that one website, one group of links, one group of rankings, two websites, twice as much work to achieve the same amount of visibility. So what you might find here in Josh's case, he moves the blog site across. That has hundreds of links. Yes, the 301s might take a bit of time to implement, but suddenly his shop has got a load more links that it didn't have previously. Sure. So hopefully the fact that the commercial pages will benefit from that.
Okay. Well, I hope you found that useful, Josh. And let's move on to the final question.
Yes.
This one feels different. Is this a normal email? It isn't it? Yes, it's a normal email. Yep. This one is from Andy Stevens. Andy says, Kelvin, I've just come across your podcast and I have binged out on it over the last 2 weeks and listened to most episodes on iTunes. I really like the Q&A podcasts you do, so I was hoping that I could contribute a bit of background. I'm fairly new when it comes to internet online marketing, brackets, including social stuff, brackets, but have years of experience with internet and e-commerce systems, which I have developed recently. The new site, www.useonesource.co.uk, is a one-stop shop for all office products. This site is mainly for our current customers so that they can place their orders online rather than telephone. But it has good Google visibility and we want to test some things out. He goes on, my questions are mainly around strategy and staff. I'm currently doing all of this myself, but my intention has always been to build an e-marketing team, the idea being that they can be exposed to a far greater amount of people than a standard sales rep. What I need to come up with is a justification for bringing on extra staff to make up an e-marketing team. What will extra staff bring? What type of person do I need? What will the results be? And what will they do? What a superb question. We've never had a question like this before.
It's a biggie,
very
isn't
sort
it?
Of personnel-y sort of question.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's an interesting one because I work for an agency. You know, you'll all know that the show is produced by Site Visibility and we're an agency. And the reason that we exist is because for a lot of businesses who want search marketing done or social media or pay-per-click, the services that we offer, there's a skill shortage to a certain extent. There's not a huge number of talented SEOs out there in the job marketplace. Mm. And B, marketers within those companies might not feel confident recruiting and managing those people, even if they can find them. Because it's that difficult one. Is if you don't understand something, how can you tell if you're recruiting the right person for the job?
Yeah.
So it's a real challenge. And that's why, you know, internet marketing agencies of all shapes and forms tend to thrive, because they're buying into the history, they're buying into the testimonials, they're buying into the case studies, they're buying into the history of that organization. So that's why they exist. But if you are going to go down that recruiting path, there's a number of issues to think about, really. One is that the best talent is going to be asking a good wage for these kind of things, because it's a skill that's in demand. So it is a proper case of buy cheap, buy twice, I think, on, you know, these kind of decisions. Yep. You might be able to get someone in who's done a little bit of this type of work and then plunging them into doing it full time. That's not to say that people can't learn. You know, people are listening to the podcast learning about internet marketing all the time, and people make a break and take a chance and do well. But if you're taking someone who's not done a lot of this kind of work previously, you need to be aware that there's a learning curve there, and that sometimes that person who's, you know, maybe $3,000 or $4,000 less expensive to pay for than someone else might take twice as long to achieve the same results.
Yes.
So it's that classic kind of money versus risk and reward there going on. In terms of the type of people to be looking for, different internet marketing disciplines require different skill sets. So like, for example, you know, like, so Andy, you work on producing podcasts and the like there.
Yep.
So that's in its own a very unique skill set. Yes, it can be applied to other ones. So, you know, you might feel really comfortable doing video. You might be confident doing writing. I know you do web development. There's all kinds of areas of that.
Yeah.
But it's around creating and understanding software and how that works with people and the content you can put behind that. But then that's a completely different skill set again to maybe someone you'd want to be doing pay-per-click. It's all about statistics and or kind of comparing and contrasting different versions of stuff. And then that person who is specialised in pay-per-click then might not be able to be confident enough to go to a board and present, you know, strategies or, you know, you know, understand ROI and the kind of commercial implications.
It's very varied, isn't it?
Yeah. And I don't envy the task of someone building an internet marketing team within a company. But what I would say is it's easier than ever, though, to find people if you are on the recruitment side of things. So too many recruiters now, they charge you their 15, 20, 25%, and all they do is type in the job title that you are after in LinkedIn and then contact 20 people. Hope two or three get back to them, and then they'll take their commission from that. But actually, it's really good now that, like, if you've got a network of contacts on Twitter or you know people on Facebook or you're attending internet marketing events which are taking place, it's very easy to get the word out there that you're looking for someone. And if you've got a good idea of what that person you're looking for is going to be like, you shouldn't have too many problems finding them, I don't think. You know, that's not to say that there aren't really, really good recruiters out there. They are, but there's some good ones and there's some bad ones, like in every industry, really. I mean, have you got any tips, Andy, how you'd go about if you were in that boat?
I haven't got a clue. Just being absolutely honest, like, I haven't got a clue. I mean, our company is tiny. There's two core members, and we just outsource a lot to various people that do
that
stuff.
That's a very good way of doing it, though, isn't it? Because if you've got to bear in mind that increasingly, you know, I think the best way for an in-house company to deal with it is to have someone internally who understands all aspects of internet marketing, is really good at, you know, coming up with strategies, really good at selling the idea behind those to senior members of the team. And then what their job is then is almost like a conductor. And then you outsource, and outsourcing doesn't mean just, you know, to, you know, another country overseas. That could be to, you know, super duper London based agency, specialists in Brighton, or a local freelancer, or whoever it is, really. But then your job is that you act as a kind of conductor. You set the rules, the, you know, almost like the drummer in a band. You know, you're setting the beat that everyone else is working to. I think that's the structure that I think could work quite well. And then the advantage is that by working with agencies and the like, or freelancers or contractors, you don't have that same kind of level of necessary commitment or reliance that you would have with an individual member of staff. So by working with a web development agency rather than a web developer in-house, is they're going to have three or four members in their team working on your website. So you get someone who's really good at graphic design, someone who's really good at back-end development, someone who's really good at usability. And you get the best of all those skill sets, rather than necessarily, if you get one person, they've got to be able to do a little bit of all those things, and they're going to be really good at some areas and less good at others. Interesting.
A juicy one. Yeah. Who does the recruiting in your organisation? Do you have to do any, or is it people?
Well, I mean, I don't tend to be involved too much personally in terms of Helen, who comes on the show occasionally, tends to do a lot of our recruitment.
Oh, does she? Right.
You know, because she's really good at spotting the talent and that kind of thing. But yeah, and we take a lot of people on. And I would say, if anyone's listening here who's not working in internet marketing currently but would really like to, there's a number of schemes out there. So if you're at university or the like, down here in Brighton, there's a organisation called Wired Sussex, and they do the Sussex Interns programme, where they centrally interview a load of people, determine 20 or 30 people who are really, really good, and then go to companies around Sussex and say, here's these really good candidates, can you work with them? They're kind of partially, I think they've got a bit of government backing behind them. So they kind of, you can take people on for a little bit lower cost as a company, but then the person's getting paid. So it's not like free work experience. And then you kind of almost have 2 or 3 weeks together, get to know them. And then in most cases, everyone we've taken on pretty much as a, you know, as a full-time employee. And there's these types of schemes all over the country and all over the world. So well worth doing that if you're not doing it already. If you're currently in a job, and this is kind of like an evening pursuit or something you're doing at weekends, but would like to be doing it full time, because I know there's quite a few people like that, try and build up some case studies to show of what you've done. So maybe it's a tiny little website you've done, or a charity project you're involved with, or a community group that can show that you've done the work.
Yes.
Because, you know, enthusiasm and understanding of the technologies is a great place to start. But if you can really show an example of something you've done previous,
it will differentiate yourself, won't it? If someone, a recruiter, speaks to 10 people, you know, maybe two of them, well, those two are a bit different because they actually did something. They said, look what I've done. And the others are just enthusiastic. It really differentiates.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I think from my experience, I've only got on well because I've taken opportunities to do things, volunteer.
Yeah.
You can never volunteer for too many things, I don't think, really. Mm.
Well, that just about wraps it up. Well, it does wrap it up for today's episode. I think they've had two for the price of one today, Kelvin.
Yep.
So that's it from me, Andy White.
And that's it from me, Kelvin Newman.
And remember, keep those questions coming. Email kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.co.uk or leave a voice message. The number is in the end spiel of me spieling at the end.
And if you're a Twitter user, if you use the hashtag, so #IMPC, myself and Andy will keep an eye on that stream and add those questions in, or respond to you over Twitter if it's appropriate.
Have fun. See you next time. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website, And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.